Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Y'all voracious man-eating son of a bitch. When you came to Hinsdale County, there were 7 Democrats. But you ate 5 of them. God damn you.
Those are the words of one Judge M.B. Jerry in 1883, as quoted in a Lake City, Colorado newspaper after the trial of a man named Alfred Packer. Judge Jerry had just sentenced Packer to death for the murders and cannibalization of Shannon Wilson Bell, James Humphrey, Frank Miller, George Noon, and Israel Swan. But did he really do it? And if he did, how much of it did he do? How much responsibility does he bear?
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderoni, this is The Shocking Details.
Hey there, welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. And as you can tell, we've got a shocking one for you this week. I'm Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
Yeah, so Vincent, you dug this one up from the crypt.
I did.
Do you want to give us a quick intro into our story for this week?
I do, but first things first, I want to talk about last week's episode a little bit. A listener called me out because I said some stuff about Marco Polo that isn't really true. Basically, I talked about him like he was not a man who really lived, but he was. That's absolutely true that he was a real human being who lived and wrote a book with his, like, his dad and his uncle.
Yeah.
But you got to understand what I was talking about is that if you grow up, I think in a lot of households with Italian descent, you'll hear all kinds of weird Marco Polo myths that he discovered China, that he invented tomatoes, things like that. That was more what I was talking about. But that said, I did not go into enough detail and I misspoke. So I wanted to correct that.
Well, it's like Marco Polo existed, I'm sure, but I'm sure his legend has been embellished somewhat as well. You know, I have no doubt about that. That happens. It's typical, really.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, so there's that. And the other thing is I probably owe some listeners an apology. This is my second story in a row that takes place in the Old West.
Oh, no. People
and I like promise I'm going to change it up. I like the Old West. And the other thing about this one is, like, who can resist a good cannibal mystery? Not me. I can't resist a cannibal mystery.
No, they're good. Although we did one of these not too long ago. So we probably should ease off after this on the cannibalism for a little while.
At least a couple of weeks. What was the last cannibal one?
Trying to think. Well, let's see. We did.
It was a while ago.
It was the whatchamacallit, the Wendigo.
Oh, that's true.
That was a couple of months ago, I guess. I don't know. This story has a certain Wendigo character to it.
But before we get to the Wendigo,
yeah,
Joe, tell us who Alfred the Cannibal was.
Alfred, and I'm not mispronouncing his name. He was not Alfred. Yeah. His name was actually was Alfred. Alfred Griner Packer. He was born in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, January 21st, 1842. He was one of 3 children. He didn't get on with his family, so he moved to Minnesota in his late teens and worked as a shoemaker. And it sounds like Alfred might have, he didn't seem to get on with a lot of people, actually. That might be part of what's going on with this story.
He was a very disagreeable man and definitely a drifter.
Yeah. Like,
I'm cutting out details. He drifted all over and did all kinds of different lines of work. There's that.
Let's see. He served in the Union Army during the American Civil War. He was honorably discharged, though, because it turns out he had epilepsy. So he only served 8 months in the Army. He reenlisted and because he really wanted to go kill people or something. I don't know. But he reenlisted. But they once again booted him back out when they discovered he was having seizures on a fairly regular basis. Like, he was as often as every 2 days, I have heard.
Yeah, that's a lot. I've known people who suffered epilepsy.
Yeah.
And even unmedicated, every 2 days is a pretty intense
case
of epilepsy.
It is. And I got to tell you, like, when you have a seizure, and I've known people who had seizures, depending on the seizure, it can knock you back brain-wise for a couple of days at least. after that. So it definitely doesn't make you good soldier material, I don't think.
Especially not by 19th century standards.
Yeah, no, not at all. Yeah.
So after the discharges, Alfred traveled west, and over the next 9 years, he worked at various odd jobs, including as a hunter, a wagon teamster, ranch hand, a miner, a field worker. But his seizures and his surly attitude really kind of kept him from any type of long-term employment. Next, he decided to work as a guide, but folks who knew him said, especially after his conviction that we talked about at the opening, that being a guide was just really not his strong suit.
I think he lied to his customers for the most part.
He had a tendency to get lost, which is not great for a guide. Sort of a you just had one job kind of thing.
Yeah, that's like when you hire the pilot and he's like, you know, you get in the, you know, you're in the plane and he's like, I gotta tell you, I'm not really sure how to land this thing. That's not the words you want to hear, you know, when you're out in the wilderness with your guide. Oh, I don't know where the hell we are. That's kind of disheartening, don't you think?
I get lost all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he was known to be, and this is a quote, feverous and quarrelsome.
Yeah, he was not well liked in general, I think, by the people who knew him.
There's not very many people who seem to like Alfred Packer.
Yeah.
He was difficult to get along with. And I mean this in the technical sense of the word, antisocial.
Yeah.
As in not being generally unsociable, but actually antisocial.
Yeah.
And he was also known to be a pathological liar.
Mm-hmm. Now,
he would just lie. Apparently, he would just make stuff up that was provably false, and he didn't care. He'd say it anyway.
You know,
he's one of those. You ever known people like that who would just be like,
I've known a few people like that would actually tell stories and lies that were just obvious BS. I mean, they didn't even. It's like they weren't even really trying to really fool. I don't really understand.
I think that's what makes it pathological.
It's hard to understand exactly what's going on with them. What exactly they get out of it? Obviously, they're getting something out of it. But now we're not going to psychoanalyze the guy, though. Let's talk about what happened to get him convicted. Turns out his story. I mean, typically in those days there'd be crime, trial, and execution, usually within about 3 days. But this stretched over a period of 9 years. So 9 years prior to the conviction, that was in 1883. So 1874, Packer had convinced five men, that he was just the guy that they needed to guide him over the treacherous San Juan Mountains in Colorado. These men had been part of a larger party, but they wanted to split off, apparently. And so they hired Packer, probably not a wise move on their part, as we'll see. And they started out, apparently, this is a little iffy, at a place in the Los Pinos Indian Agency. And at that time, that was a big chunk of Colorado, like all of Colorado, almost west of the Continental Divide. That was basically kind of the Ute Indian Reservation. And of course, as time went by, it shrank down quite a lot, as reservations tended to do back in those days.
That's how they did it. We found other sources that said they left from Salt Lake City. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. So just, we had a whole conversation before the podcast trying to figure out the geography of this story.
Well, those could both be true. I mean, he might have actually hooked up with these guys, like say, in Salt Lake City and then moseyed down to, it sounds like they started out somewhere kind of south of Montrose, Colorado, which is about 175.
That seems to be the consensus.
Yeah, about 175 miles southwest of Denver. Kind of down towards the southwest corner of the state. I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on that. So they leave this place, or they're making plans to leave this place. But this was in early February, and it's still the dead of winter. They had stayed with the Ute tribal leader, whose name was Ouray. Mm-hmm. And he warned them.
Ouray was known to be a really friendly guy to white settlers.
Yeah, no, he was, generally a good, peaceable guy, you know. As you know, there was a lot of warfare between the Indians and all the white settlers who were really kind of invading the Ute Indian territories at that time. But we're not going to get too deep into that. Ouray was still had a generally friendly attitude. But he told these guys that they were out of their freaking minds. He warned them. He said that even the Utes, who were very experienced living in them mountains, and they had lived there for thousands of years, apparently, they wouldn't be crazy enough to try to go over the mountains at that time of the year. Our friend Alfred Packer was like, bro, you know, I can handle it.
That's how I imagine him talking.
No big, you know. So the guys in his expedition trusted him. Apparently, he had really fooled them. They really wanted to get out there. I think they wanted to probably... you know, probably any one of those guys could have recognized that it was risky going out there, starting out in February, going over the mountains.
I think they had dollar signs in their eyes.
Exactly. They wanted to beat the springtime rush. It's kind of what I think. So I think their greed maybe got the better of their judgments in this case. And they believed that Packer was such an ace guide that he would get them through it.
Which is
bad move, guys.
I mean, yeah. I'm not trying to talk trash about these poor men, but
yeah,
that's just stupid. You only have to look. I'm not a Wild West prospector, but I could probably be standing in Montrose, Colorado, looking up at those mountain peaks in February, going, "That looks dangerous."
There's many reasons. There's avalanches, and you know, the wintertime, of course, can be a kind of a tough time for the critters up there too. It's lean eating, and that might make you look a little bit tastier to them.
And you also got to realize the Colorado mountains get tons and tons of snow.
Oh yeah,
huge snowfall. And so if you're taking horses or just trying to hike, you're going to have a hard time. And this is also factors in. So the expedition was poorly provisioned for a trip like this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
They lacked really basic supplies like snowshoes.
All right.
So you got to figure there's easily something like
there's 10 feet of snow. How are you going to get through that without snowshoes, guys?
Or skis or something. Yeah. They apparently were just going to walk in their boots.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a bush master or whatever, an expert at bushcraft, to realize that's foolhardy.
And you got to wonder about the skills of a guide who would take a bunch of people so poorly provisioned into the mountains. Exactly. Although I have a theory about this, but I'm not going to talk
you
about
do,
it.
You do, and I think
later.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys ran off so half-cocked that they had only a few matches, no flint, which is important if your matches get wet.
Yeah.
And not really like good winter cold weather clothing, and they didn't bring any weapons.
Which is absurd. What do you do if you meet a bear or something like that?
Exactly. And how are you, like, I guess I don't know what weapons means, but like, you've also, in principle, you're probably going to want to do what hunting you can.
Yeah.
At least in a survival situation, if you don't need to. I would say even today, if you were going to attempt something like that, bringing a gun would be really important.
I would think so. Hell yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I would.
So apparently, though, it is worth noting, this was not considered a dangerous place for Native Americans, partly because they weren't going up there this time of year because it was crazy dangerous.
Yeah, they knew better, but Packer did not.
They did not. So Packer told them the journey was just going to take 2 weeks. Which is, I mean, I don't know, depending on, like we said, there's some confusion about the geography, but it kind of reminds me of that movie, The Money Pit. 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But several weeks lay had passed and
no word of the group, right? They just sort of disappeared into the mountains.
Yep. And that's, I think, what everybody thought, was that they had just disappeared in the wild, freezing mountains of Colorado.
Yeah, and all died, which...
R.I.P.
Yeah.
Pour one out for the boys.
Yeah, but actually, it turns out, 2 months later, they weren't quite dead, or at least not all of them. Yeah, 2 months later, it was late April, 1874, and a group of workers spied Alfred Packer stumbling across a frozen lake at the Los Pinos Agency. That would be somewhere south of the town of Gunnison, Colorado at that time, I believe, from what my checking is. And so that was quite a bit, what was it, about 130 miles east of where he left from?
Yeah.
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 And
it depends on the route they took, but yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And he had survived his ordeal somehow, but there was something a bit off about him. For one thing, he appeared to be surprisingly well fed for a dude who had just spent months lost in the Colorado mountains, you know, and he'd survived it somehow. And so that raised a few suspicions.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is once again reminiscent of our pal Swift Runner, the Wendigo.
That's true.
You know,
now that I think about it.
He came out from a harsh winter looking surprisingly well fed as well. That was because he'd eaten his family.
So needless to say, some people had some questions about his healthy condition and the missing members of his party. Mm. And they found him in possession of a couple of wallets, who carries more than one wallet, right? And quite a bit of cash money. Which is odd because, yeah, again, why would a guy have more than one wallet for a trip over the mountains?
Mm-hmm.
And also everybody knew him to be very, very broke.
Yeah, at the start of the journey. That's why he took the job on. That's why he probably kind of oversold himself as a guide to these guys.
Presumably, he was desperate.
Yeah.
So suspicions swirled around Packer because he rented a room at Dolan's Saloon.
Oh, nice place.
Apparently.
I don't know.
Larry Dolan, I think it was one of the nicer places in town. Larry Dolan, the proprietor, claimed that Packer spent around $100. That would be something like 2,290 in 2021 bucks.
Mm-hmm. And 2022 what? Bucks, that's going to be about $3,500.
Yeah. Dolan claimed that Packer had offered to loan him an additional $300. That's $6,870 in 2021 American currency that was to be paid back with interest. Packer also spent $78 at Otto Mears General Store.
Mm-hmm.
Do the math on that. So this guy spent something close to $10,000 in modern money in a matter of days. So he's a big spender.
As I said before, again, I'm going to put all my criminal wisdom into a book called The Crime Committer's Handbook. But, you know, if you do happen to like come across some money and you, by sketchy means, you want to like be discreet about it, right?
Yeah.
This idiot was not discreet. You know, what a bonehead.
I think your epithet hit the nail on the head. Packer.
Yeah.
He may be a criminal, but he's not a genius, and nobody thought he was.
Yeah, apparently not. So he did what I would have done probably, though. He spent most of his days drunk as a skunk. And then after getting hammered, he would tell conflicting stories about his journey and how he somehow got separated from the rest of his party. And all these different conflicting tales got folks talking around town. People were trying to figure out, well, just what was the truth about what happened? And it got worse for him when the authorities took an interest and started questioning him as well. He told them also various conflicting tales. They kind of revolved around the members of the party killing each other in arguments and conflicts. And that sometimes they had to resort to eating the fallen members, which is, you know, probably something you want to keep on the DL if you can. But he owned up to it fairly early on. But after he admitted to this, the violence and the cannibalism, he was arrested. But he managed to escape custody before his trial. And I'm not sure. I have no actual reliable account on exactly how he escaped. But
all I was able to find is that the jail in Seguache, where he was held, was really just a log cabin.
Yeah. No,
somehow he was able to get out of it. There's different stories that you'll read about how he did that. But the point is, it wasn't like a modern jail.
Yeah, no.
I guess what I'm trying to say is it wasn't a brilliant escape. He just found a weakness in the structure and walked away.
Pretty much. I mean, a lot of those little towns in the middle of nowhere didn't really have a lot of money to devote to things like law enforcement and prisons and jails and stuff like that. And that stuff's expensive to build and maintain and staff. And that's why, unfortunately, things like lynchings were vastly more common back in those days.
Right.
You know,
or just really quick trials and executions.
Yeah, it was like, it was just a much more cost effective way to go about that whole thing. But then August, just some months later, an illustrator, and some of this guy's work is, by the way, still out there to be seen. But this illustrator, whose name I do not know, but he was working for Harper's Weekly. He came upon five corpses along the banks of a tributary of the Gunnison River. I believe it's called Dead Man's Creek. And I wonder how it got to get that name, Dead Man's Creek, huh? So there are five corpses strewn along the banks of this creek. They were in a state of advanced decay, but according to the illustrator, they showed signs of butchery. Somebody had carved them up like a steer. So, wonder who that could have been. They determined that the authorities, that is, after this was reported, they determined that that of the four skulls they found, all of them showed signs of having been crushed, as in somebody took an axe or something and bashed their heads in. They were examined by the local authorities, and they were buried where they were found. And there's a monument, actually.
Yep. To go visit it.
Yeah, the massacre. And actually, doesn't the monument actually have a reproduction of the sketch of the bodies that the illustrator made there when he found them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of fortuitous that an illustrator happened to be the guy that found the bodies. Right?
Such bad luck for Packer that this guy was a qualified illustrator. And literally, they showed this illustration around town to help ID the bodies because he was that good an illustrator. So it was almost like a, you know, like how we have composite sketches of you know, does that are found now.
Probably better than that, really. The guy wasn't working off that description. That's
true.
He was working out the actual corpses right there in front of him. So,
And that was helpful in figuring out whose corpses those were.
Well, apparently they were the members of the party that had left in February to go off with Alfred Packer's ace guide.
After quite some time on the run, Alfred was found just over 9 years later living in Wyoming under a false name. He was brought back to Colorado and put on trial in Lake City, which is the seat of Hinsdale County, Colorado. His story of each man succumbing in turn to the elements and being eaten had changed. Alfred now claimed that he was separated from the group, and after stumbling around the mountains, he came upon Bell.
That was Shannon Bell, one of the guys at the party, right? Okay.
And he'd killed all the other members of the party.
Bell had killed everybody? Okay.
Yes. That Bell had been had killed them. It didn't stick. The jury and the judge weren't buying it.
They weren't.
He was convicted of killing the men and having desecrated their bodies. But he was not convicted of cannibalism because it isn't sort of specifically illegal.
Yeah.
Actually, in most places, cannibalism isn't actually a crime, but the desecration of corpses.
You don't really need to ban cannibalism because there's not that many people that would do it, you know?
Yeah. And then I think it also makes sense, like, if you know, it would suck if you were lost in the mountains and you had to resort to cannibalism, like, you know, like your friend died and you felt terrible about it, but you had to do it to live. Mm-hmm. And then you come down out of the mountains.
We've all been there, right? You know?
I mean, this is basically every other weekend for me.
Well, no, yeah, same here. I mean,
but, you know, basically you come down out of the mountains, right? And they're like, God, we really feel bad for your ordeal, but we do technically have to charge you with the crime of cannibalism.
Yeah, no.
No one would want that. So they set up this kind of ad hoc trial, which sounds fascinating to me. So they're in the middle of this trial. Two Utah tribemen rushed into the agency holding strips of dried human flesh that they refer to as white man's meat.
Jerky. It was basically not beef jerky. It was people jerky, but yeah.
And I guess, I don't know, I guess it had some skin left on it that they could tell that it was from white guys.
Ooh.
They had found this on a hill near the agency while they were hunting. And they presented this as proof positive that cannibalism had happened that winter.
Mm.
This totally changed Packer's defense.
Mm.
He fainted. He crumpled up on the floor. He was unresponsive. Maybe he had a seizure. I don't know. When he was revived, he profusely begged for mercy, and he swore that he would make a full confession and tell the truth.
Mm.
He told the judge it would not be the first time that people had been obliged to eat each other when they were hungry. That's a quote.
Ooh. Well, so what was his story now?
Packer claimed that the party had left Ure's camp and what they thought was sufficient supplies, but before long, their provisions were gone. Owing to the rough terrain and the expenditure of energy, they needed to just to keep going, you know, to keep hiking on in these terrible, you know, the body will need a lot more calories to sustain itself under really cold conditions.
Oh, yeah.
And they survived for days on roots, pine gum, rosebuds, and occasionally a rabbit. But after a few days of no wildlife, Packer claimed that the men started to eye each other in an unsettling way. A few days later, he left camp to gather firewood. And when he got back, he found the four men around the slain body of Israel Swan, who had been struck in the head with a hatchet, killed instantly. The surviving four began to butcher Swan.
Mm.
Packer accepted the situation and admitted to joining in.
Mm, okay.
He claimed in court that several thousand dollars was found on Swan's person, a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah.
And it was divided up between the remaining men.
Yeah, might have played some role in his murder as well as the hunger, right? You think? Maybe? they probably would have known that, you know, after all that time of traveling together, probably somebody would have noticed that he had a bunch of money on him.
Yeah, you gotta wonder. I mean, that's a lot of money. That really makes you a mark back then.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Packard and his homies consumed the most, and it's a quote here, most agreeable parts of Swan's body, packed up the leftovers, and hiked on, bellies full.
Nice. But, you know, the thing about it is that if something like that has just happened, whether you're talking about Alfred Packer or one of the other four, my move would be to wait till the other guys are asleep and then murder them all. Because the fact of the matter is, it's happened already. It's going to happen again. And the only way you're going to be sure that it's not you that gets killed and butchered is to kill the other guys. It's kind of almost like the prisoner's dilemma, you know? It's like, so anyway, I know that sounds like a really horrible, bloodthirsty thing to say, but I mean, I would definitely be thinking about, geez, you know, if I don't kill these guys, they might kill me. And all of those guys had to have been thinking that, don't you think?
Well, let's save that for theories. Yeah. I just want to get through Packer's account.
Okay.
What he said.
Yeah.
When he swore that he was telling the truth, mm-hmm. this is what he said.
Yeah.
What's worth noting is that within just 2 days, they were out of meat and no game was to be found.
Yeah. Well,
so I don't know how much Israel Swan weighed, but how much meat are these guys eating?
I don't know. Well, it sounds like they I don't know, did they thoroughly butcher the body and take every little piece of anyway, I don't want to get too graphic here, actually, but
yeah,
it may have been. People were smaller in those days, really. Nutrition wasn't as good as it is today, so you know, it might not have been that much meat there, I guess.
Yeah, it's hard to say. We'll talk about that in more detail later. So they're out of meat. What are they going to do?
They're gonna pick the fattest guy in the group and kill him.
I think that's exactly what happened. Packer, Bell, yeah. Humphrey, and Noon, they decided in secret that Miller would be the next to go.
Okay, now I want to know this. Why? How is it that Miller is hanging out and he notices that the other four have kind of disappeared?
I don't know.
Isn't he kind of, wouldn't he be kind of thinking right about that? I wonder what those guys are off doing. What if they're talking about me?
That's what I'd be wondering.
I'd be wondering that.
Packer told the court that Miller was a stocky man and that he was chosen for his soft, presumably tasty flesh. Mm,
okay.
He was killed by Bell with a hatchet blow to the head while he was picking up wood for the fire off the ground.
Obviously an accident. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Miller was then butchered and consumed. Packer took Millard's knife, and Miller's share of Swan's money was redistributed among the remaining men, who then traveled onward.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that sounds like they're having a good old time out there. So
at least they're eating well.
Yeah, that's true. And but conditions up in the mountains were not really improving. So Humphrey was the next to be sacrificed and eaten. And next up, followed not too long by George Noon. So now it was just down to two men, Bell and Packer. And Packer said that the two men swore a pact to God to not eat each other, right? Yeah. I would swear that pact, and as soon as the other guy's asleep, bam, because you know that's not going to hold, right? He apparently said that they each had a rifle at this point,
right? Which is a contradictory account.
Well, and actually, the whole they must have had rifles at the beginning. Whoever said they had no weapons, maybe what they meant was that they didn't have enough ammo, or maybe they had inadequate rifles for the task at hand. I don't know, but yeah. I don't know. It is a little comedy, but according to him, they each had a rifle at this point and a couple of $1,000 in cash. Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe they left without weapons and they ran into some Indians somewhere on their journey and did a little trading with them or something. I don't know. Bought some rifles.
So I don't want to jump the gun on this, Joe, but you just can't really think too hard about it, because one of the few things that we know about Alfred Packer is that he was a liar.
Oh, true. Yeah, very true.
So Packer didn't have a rifle on him when he wandered into Seguache that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
So maybe he made the rifle thing up. Maybe they didn't actually have rifles, or maybe they did, and then he made up the thing about leaving without weapons. It's hard to say.
Yeah, I know. It is. So, yeah, let's not get too off in the weeds on that one.
Yeah, exactly.
So what they did, besides promising not to eat each other, they also agreed that they would tell people, they agreed on basically a story. They would tell people that the four other guys had died from the elements and had been buried according to Christian tradition. And they swore never, ever to speak again of the cannibalism thing.
Yeah.
And because they both kind of felt like no one would ever believe that it was really necessary to eat their friends. And by the way, it's not something you'd want to tell the world, because I mean, you're always going to have that mark of Cain on you. Even if people understand that you were desperate and all that stuff, they're still going to like be creeped out by you from then on, don't you think?
How could they not, right?
Yeah. I mean, so they swore an oath of secrecy and an oath not to murder each other, but apparently that didn't hold, did it?
It didn't.
Oh, damn it.
After keeping on for a few days with little food other than one small rabbit and some roots to eat, Bell and Packer were exhausted and set up camp next to a lake. Packer told the court that a few days later, Bell jumped out of his blanket and screamed that he could not take it anymore. He told Packer that one of them was going to die for food. He snatched his rifle, which had no bullets in it at this point, and ran at Packer to beat his skull in. Packer deflected the blow, grabbed a hatchet, and he struck Bell in the head with it, killing him.
Mm.
Alfred feared he'd starve, so he butchered Bell. The guy was already dead, eating as much as he could in preparation for the rest of his journey. And then he packed as much as he could carry. He also relieved Bell of his share of the money and then headed out. Unclear if he'd even survive. Soon he came to the top of a hill and saw the Los Pinos Indian Agency, threw away the remainder of Bell's flesh, thinking an animal would eat them. That's presumably what the Ute Indians found.
Yeah.
And said he did so with some hesitation, as you see. And he confessed this in court, that he had grown quite fond of the taste of human flesh. He told the court that he found the portion around the breast to be especially delicious.
I got to say that I think his expectations that the animals would eat the remains was a reasonable one. I think the critters in this part of the mountains in Colorado are just, I don't know, man, they're just not particularly bright or something. I mean, I don't understand how it is that those four bodies laid there next to Dead Man's Creek for all those many, many months and were scavenged by animals. I mean, I think their faces would have been eaten off of them. So it's weird.
Yeah. You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
But hey, there is one other thing we should talk about.
Yeah.
That quote that we opened up on from Judge Jerry.
Yeah.
About Alfred Packer. That would be some journalistic license.
Oh, yeah. Creative writing.
AKA just total BS.
Yeah.
Probably politically motivated, I'm guessing, from the thing about Democrats. Judge Jerry was actually pretty eloquent. So here's a statement as it reads in the actual records.
Mm. Okay, quote.
Alfred Packer, the judgment of this court is that you be removed from hence to the jail of Hinsdale County and there confined until the 19th day of May, A.D. 1883, and that on said 19th day of May 1883, you're to be taken from thence by the Sheriff of Hinsdale County to a place of execution prepared for this purpose at some point within the corporate limits of the town of Lake City in the said county of Hinsdale, and between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. of said day, you, then and there, by said Sheriff, be hung by the neck until you are dead, 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 and may God have mercy upon your soul.
Unquote.
That's a little more... A little more eloquent than you, voracious son of a bitch.
He's very lawyerly all the way till the very end. Hung with it until you are dead, dead, dead. That's when he kind of got when he lost it just a little bit.
I don't think Judge Jerry thought too high of old Alfred.
No, I don't imagine too many people did. But here's the thing, though. Remarkably, Packer's death sentence was eventually overturned by the Colorado Supreme Court. Apparently, the evidence just wasn't there, although you think his confession would have been enough.
Well, no, you know? because he never confessed to killing anyone except for Bell in self-defense.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing about it is you know, I mean, it did appear he'd been involved in some hinky stuff. And of course, assuming that he had embellished the story in his favor, he obviously had murdered at least one or two people, it seems. But you're right. The evidence wasn't there. And frankly, I gotta be honest with you. The four bodies they found at Dead Man's Creek, I'm not 100% sure. I mean, they probably were his companions. But, you know,
they were recognized from the sketches. That is what it is.
Yeah. But. And so they probably were, but you never know. I mean, maybe, possibly, because they were recognized, but people were expecting to see those faces also, in a sense. You know what I'm saying? I mean, four guys, but now the word is out. He left with five guys. And, and so they had all sort of gotten varying amounts of looks at these guys' faces. And they're kind of expecting, you know, well, four bodies turn up and there's nobody else that's disappeared around here recently. So it must be those guys. So you look at the sketches and say, yeah, those are the guys, you know, maybe not. Maybe the identification was not as sure as you think it is, as it was.
That's true. I mean, that's a point. I mean, it's hard to say. I'm inclined to believe that it was those guys.
I think it probably was, but from the point of view of I'm sitting on a jury thinking about it, maybe not. You know, maybe I'd have to take that with a grain of salt.
They didn't come up with any forensic evidence that contradicted Packer's story, and he's the only living witness. So it is hard to convict someone, even in a modern court, if you say, well, his story doesn't not check out.
Well, it not checks out in one very big, serious way, but I won't mention that quite yet.
We're going to talk about that later.
He seriously tripped over himself in a major way.
But near as I can tell, the court didn't catch that. So anyway, we'll talk about that. But so there's really no evidence that wasn't the truth. They kind of had to take him at his word.
Yeah.
So what they did is they sent him up on five counts of voluntary manslaughter and sentenced him to 40 years in prison.
Yeah.
But he didn't serve that. He was eventually paroled in 1901 when a friend of his...
He had a friend?
Apparently he had a friend. I actually don't know who this person is. I never found a name
or
how he knew Packer. A friend of Packer's mounted a public campaign to clear his name. And basically, I don't know that it cleared his name, but it got him out of jail where he lived the rest of his life as a free man.
Wow, amazing.
He died in, I think, 1913.
And then, but then the site where the bodies had been buried, remember, they had been examined forensically as much as could be done in those days and then buried on site way back when. But in 1989, that site was excavated. The bodies were exhumed for forensic analysis using modern techniques. But the analysis actually proved inconclusive. It didn't corroborate or disprove Alfred Packer's stories. So it's unlikely that we'll ever know precisely what happened up in those mountains. The murders we'll never know who killed who, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, you can still visit the site where the bodies were found. And there's a neat little plaque there. And did they rebury the bodies at that same site or did they move them?
I do believe that they are still on the site.
Okay, it makes sense. I mean, yeah, why move the bodies? That's a good spot for them. Right, you know, four dead men next to Dead Man Creek. That makes sense to me. Yeah.
So there's a couple little things. I'm going to go off script here for just a second, Joe.
Okay.
I could take up a whole episode just talking about the pop culture fallout from this.
Mm-hmm. There was some, yeah.
There was. This was just real quick. I want to talk about how this has continued to have an influence over popular culture. Mm. There's a dining hall at the University of Colorado campus called the Alfred Packer Memorial Dining Hall.
I love it.
What I love about it is that the plaque looks pretty serious. It's actually not called that. It's just a plaque. Mm. So the dining hall has a different name, but the plaque's been there since the 50s. And to this day, students walk right by it and never think that that's a weird, sick joke. Mm. The story of Alfred Packer plays a role in the Dashiell Hammett book, The Maltese Falcon. Mm. I believe it's not in the movie, but I could be wrong about that. It was also the inspiration for the pre-South Park, Trey Parker and Matt Stone project, Cannibal the Musical.
Yeah. Was that pre-South Park, or was that? I thought that was kind of in the middle of South Park or something.
I think it was just pre-South Park.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Check me if I'm wrong about that, because it came out before Orgasmo. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so forgive me if I'm wrong.
Oh, no, that's fine. Yeah, I got to see that. I never saw Cannibal the Musical.
It's funny. It's worth watching. Okay. It's really low budget. The other thing that I thought I would mention, which is pretty interesting, is that Packer's grave was robbed and his bones were stolen.
Oh, really?
They apparently were put on display by Ripley's Believe It or Not. Ripley's has since claimed that they are no longer in possession of them. A strong rumor apparently coming from people inside Ripley's, I don't know, or people who have some knowledge of Ripley's, say that it was stored in a vault with a bunch of other curios that they didn't have on display that was located in New Orleans and was likely destroyed by Hurricane Katrina.
Oh, really?
Katrina. Apparently, that is the rumor that the skull was being held in some kind of facility in New Orleans, and that it was destroyed in the floods of Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah.
So kind of brings us right up to the present day. So Alfred Packer casts a long shadow.
Yeah, he does, for a guy that many of us had never heard of. I mean, I have to admit, when you brought this story up, you know, I was just thinking to myself, that name rings a bell. That name rings a bell. But, you know, I couldn't quite, you know, place it, you know, until I read the story. But
I kind of did the same thing. I ran across it while I was researching for the Red Ghost I did 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, Alfred Packer, a legend, but played by John Wayne in the biographical movie. Not really, but that'd be hilarious, wouldn't it?
That would have been amazing. No, seriously, I want to watch that movie tonight.
Yes. Or maybe Gary Cooper. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
That's like the idea of John Wayne being like, breasts are looking tasty, pilgrim.
Yeah. No, usually in a Western, when you wanted to cast somebody like him, you would cast like, I don't know what, Lee Marvin maybe to.
That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. Lee Marvin or like, you could do that. You could, I don't know. Yeah. I could think of a bunch of actors.
Yeah. But I think John Wayne would have been more awesome.
But while we're talking about movies, we should talk about the greatest movie.
Well, yeah, we should talk about this movie from our sponsor and then move into the theories about what happened.
We're gonna get the theories
what right happened up in those mountains? What really, who killed who, et cetera. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsor, Contactee.
All right.
The movie.
Contactee. All right. I'm sure all of you have heard of this, but I know for a fact, because I got numbers, that some of you haven't watched the movie yet. And it's available on Amazon Prime. It's a sci-fi thriller movie, psychological, but it's got outer space elements. It's about a therapist who was trying to clear his patient's name by proving that she really has been contacted by aliens. And so he takes her out of the facility that she's in and basically puts her in a place where he thinks that she will be abducted, sets up cameras to watch. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spoil any more than that because that's where stuff starts really going off the rails. If you haven't seen it, please watch it. Amazon Prime. It won't cost you anything if you already have a Prime membership. If not, you know, by all means, go out and watch it. If you have seen it, then recommend it to a friend. And if you are in a place that you can't see it, get in touch with us. shockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. I will make sure you can watch it if you're outside any of the markets that are streaming it. And any type of rating and review, we would be incredibly grateful.
Okay, and we're back. So it's time to talk about a few theories. So, right. I don't know.
Let's keep these short and sweet, because like the theories are pretty thin here.
Yeah, well, why don't you lead off with your favorite theory, Vincent?
All right, my favorite theory, and I think probably the one that most people embrace. Yeah. Theory number one, Alfred Packer was a murderous cannibal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People in the Old West sure believed it.
Yeah.
I mean, even people who were responsible for commuting a sentence from the death sentence to life, I think they even believed he did it. They just couldn't prove it.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived out his days under the cloud of having been suspected of being a vile man-eater.
He did. For good reason, I think.
For good reason. And there's one thing that in my research, I just didn't find anyone having said, but that was really obvious to me. And it's weird because it didn't come up in the research I was doing, just, you know, reading stuff on the internet. But his harrowing tale of the men consuming each other one by one, it's not true.
Obviously not, no.
it has to be a lie.
Yeah.
Because he told a tale of the men eating each other as they traveled.
Yeah.
But the bodies were all found at a single site.
Exactly.
So he lied about that one very critical detail.
Yeah, and that is something I'm kind of shocked that no one noticed, appeared to have noticed that.
Yeah, I don't get it. Yeah, you think Judge Jerry would have been like, yo, that was a powerful confession, sir, but you obviously made one major element up that makes us question.
Yeah.
And I guess I should say, I did not read the court records.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I can. It could be that the judge knew he was lying and that's why he gave him the death sentence.
Very possibly, yeah.
It could have been that he was onto that, but I didn't see it written anywhere.
Yeah.
Even on online forums, nobody was like, wait, it's clear Packer was making this up.
Mm, yeah, but I think that probably, I mean, people weren't stupid back in those days. I mean, no. I'm sure somebody, you know, the judge and, you know, the judge, the prosecutor, I'm sure somebody noticed this little problem with it. And of course, given the fact the bodies were all in one place, that mm-hmm. indicates that he was the one who actually murdered them. Because if somebody, you know, if he'd gone out looking for firewood or to urinate or something, and it comes back and everybody's dead, you know, he would have said so. You know, he would have said mm-hmm. like, yeah, I came back and they'd all been murdered by the one guy, and so I killed him because I had to, because if I'd gone to sleep, he would have murdered me too.
Would have been a better story if he told that one.
And everybody would have understood. And I don't know. I don't actually know why he didn't tell that story. I think personally, I have a couple of possible theories here, but one of my favorite theory, I think, is that Packer intended to kill them and rob them all along. He was not that, like, and remember, the Indians are saying, like, dude, don't go up in those mountains. Oh, my God. He's, like, going, like, oh, no, I'm an ace guide. There will be no problem. I think even Packer was aware of his limitations as a guide.
Yeah.
But he didn't really intend to take them deep, deep, deep into the mountains and across the mountains. He intended to take them up far enough away to be sure there were no prying eyes around, murder them all. Mm-hmm. And then come back down out of the mountains later on with this tale of, oh, yeah, we all just sort of perished from the elements and I just barely managed to survive and yada, yada, yada. But that's mm-hmm. what I think, is that he intended to murder them all. And he did.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
The other gruesome detail of this is that I've never heard a story of survival cannibalism where there was so much meat consumed.
Mm-hmm.
Packer and whoever was in on this with him were positively feasting.
Yeah.
You know, 2 months is a long time up in the mountains, but they would have been eating hundreds of pounds of human flesh,
maybe.
Which is considered to be a lot like pork.
I don't know. I don't know exactly how much good meat the average human being has on him. It's kind of like a cow. You know, you slaughter a cow.
Yeah.
I mean, I weigh a little over 200 pounds, but I mean, a lot of that's like bone and crap that you really like, my intestines. You probably don't want to eat my intestines, frankly. I'd never seen my intestines, but I bet they're pretty disgusting, et cetera.
Yeah.
You know, but still, yeah, you're right, though. That is a fair amount of meat there.
If you compare that to like how much, if you look at, I don't have exact amounts, but if you look at how much of the meat was eaten by the people in the Uruguayan soccer team crash
mm-hmm.
in the Andes, they were eating just enough meat to keep going.
Yeah.
And I think that they, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have this poor Alfred Packard guy all backwards, but I, near as I can tell, and this tracks with the account that he looked very well fed when he came down out of the mountains, I think this guy was not eating the minimum amount.
Yeah. So he was up there about 2 months, right? Mm-hmm. And they left with maybe a couple of weeks worth of food. And it's also possible, like, if you killed them fairly early on, then, you know, there would have been all that extra food. They had 2 weeks worth of food between five guys. That's 10 weeks for one guy. If you killed him early enough on, you know, he had a lot of that food as well. So he was living pretty well up there in the mountains, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't think it appears that when you look at the where the bodies were found, where he started, where he ended, they never actually crossed the San Juan Mountains.
Man,
and,
yeah.
I don't think he intended to cross them. I don't think. And I think there's, like I said, one up deep enough into the mountains to go do the deed and then come back out again. Although I want to say, though, that there is another possibility, which is that he did not actually start out intending to murder those guys. Mm-hmm. But maybe, you know, like, you know, for example, he, I am pretty sure, oversold himself as a guide. What if the five guys that he was guiding up there, what if they turned out to be a bit of a disappointment as prospectors? He goes up there in the mountains with these guys thinking, yeah, we're going to go up to this gold money territory, and these ace prospector dudes are going to find us a nice gold claim or something like that. And they get up there, and it turns out they're incompetent. They can't find a damn thing. He's just disappointed and angry, so he kills them. and then of course, has to you know, nibble on them a bit to get by till springtime.
He never got them anywhere near where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the well, then I do beyond th- that.
I do think that they're actually where they were, where the bodies were all found. I believe that actually became kind of a gold mining area, didn't it?
Okay.
I believe it did. And
maybe, yeah.
You know, I don't know, but
I've never heard that Packer was cut in on the proceeds in any way. Near as I know, he was paid just to guide them.
Well, I kind of suspect, given his personality, that his plan was to, you know, wait until they found a nice gold strike and then right. you know commit a little nope. murder. Maybe that was it. He was going to do whatever it took to come out of this with cash, gold, whatever, and
right,
he didn't
right.
really care. But so I think he was a murderer at least. And maybe he didn't go up there actually intending to become a cannibal. I do believe he intended to, you know, murder and rob those guys.
I think you might have a point. So this kind of leads to the next theory, mm-hmm. which is that Packer may have been a cannibal, mm-hmm. but he wasn't a murderer. And this basically actually would be saying that his court account had at least elements of truth to it, even though we know there's at least one big lie.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's basically Alfred's story, right? But the part that tracks really well with this is that Bell was known to be a really violent guy with a temper.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about all there is for it, is that research that people did into who Bell was, that he actually was the kind of man who might hatchet a guy to death, mm-hmm. take his money, and maybe even eat him.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that. So the way I would imagine this maybe is that Bell is some kind of psycho, but he believes that he needs Packer to get him out of these mountains.
Yeah.
And he's fine with killing the other men off, but he wants to kill Packer last because he's the guide.
Mm-hmm.
Packer just happens to beat him at the fight. I don't know. Like I said, there's not a lot to it, but I think it's worth mentioning that I do think, from just a little tiny sliver of research, that there's something about his depiction of Bell in the court case that actually does track with what people who knew Bell.
Yeah. Although I got to say, and again, you know, it made such obvious sense to me, though, for Packer to kill Bell rather than wait for Bell to come at him and then kill him then. I mean, but of course, you know, I'd never actually killed anybody. I hate to admit it, but I never have. And it might not be as easy as you think. I mean, but it just seems to me like it was just an imperative. If this is all true, it would have been just, you know, because otherwise Bell is going to kill you sooner or later, dude. So, still, you know, but maybe it's the case. Maybe Packer actually just couldn't bring himself to do it. He had opportunities to, you know, chop him in the back of the head with the old hatchet, and he just couldn't do it.
Who knows?
I find this unlikely, but maybe, you know.
I think so. I mean, what I would say is I think that the truth is likely somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I don't believe, I know that there's at least one huge lie stuck at the dead center of Packer's court confession.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that makes me suspicious of everything else he ever said about the matter. But I doubt, I don't know. Some people you read on the internet have this idea that Packer went up there, they got a little hungry and that he just turned full cannibal, almost, you know, like Cannibal the Musical.
Yeah.
And I don't know that it actually happened that way. It could have.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably somewhere in the middle of those two extreme poles.
I kind of believe that he was a murderer, and because, you know, I don't know. I mean, since his story is so at odds with the obvious blatant evidence, and that
right.
kind of indicates guilt to me.
I'm kind of with you on that. Yeah. I actually went in this hoping maybe I could try to at least partially exonerate Packer.
Yeah.
And the more research I did, the more I was like, nope, this guy did it.
It's really hard to make a case for his innocence, unfortunately. Like I said.
Well, even for his partial innocence, I think it's tough to believe.
Yeah. And I'm kind of intrigued by the thought, like I said, that he intended to murder those guys the entire time, you know.
I think that's interesting.
Although at the same time, you know, if that's the case, you know, you could always say, well, why did he? They actually did travel quite a ways into the mountains, nowhere near to the top and over. They traveled.
That's true.
They traveled quite a bit in there. You know, you actually probably didn't go to need to take them that deep, that deep into the mountains to kill them. So
that's true.
You know, there's that. There is that. That cuts against my theory that he, you know, he took them out there just to kill them.
Now, you had a theory about a certain supernatural entity that I think probably solves this case.
The Wendigo. Yes.
The Wendigo. Yes,
the Wendigo. But the problem is there have been no Wendigo sightings historically that far south, have there?
Never. It's not a part. I even looked to see if there was maybe a different name for a Wendigo type of monster that would have been seen in that area.
El Wendigo.
Or like if the Ute Indians or if the Pueblo Indians or somebody who was even roughly in that area had a cannibalism spirit myth that would track with it. And I found nothing.
Yeah, I don't know.
But you know what the Wendigo can do? The Wendigo can take a vacation if he wants to take a vacation.
I don't know. Wait a second. No, this just occurs to me. Packer actually lived for a time in Minnesota.
He did. Oh!
Could he have picked
you're so
up,
right.
He could have picked up a little Wendigo possession up there.
Oh, we saw it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Wendigo goes south.
Okay, it's the Wendigo. All right, that solves it. You're right. Okay. Well, anyway, that's about all I've got. I don't have any more theories.
I think we wrapped it up. I think we solved it. He picked up a little Wendigo when he was in Minnesota, headed south, suffering and then it reared its ugly head.
Suffering from acute Wendigitis. It's in the DSM. It's a specific, it's a diagnosis. But I forgot the code. But all right. So anyway, I guess that's about it. So until next week, stay tuned, of course, for a little bit of information from our friend Tess about how to, you know, write us an email and find us on social media, and of course,
which we would love you to do.
Absolutely. Yeah, totally. If you feel free to drop us a line and tell us how wonderful we are. We like that. And see what else. You might think about leaving us a rating and a review if you haven't done so already.
That really helps us, it really helps more people discover the podcast because of the way that algorithms work. So we'd really love it if you would do that and help us grow our audience and have more people to talk to on our social media, more interaction for you that'll make, and more good suggestions from a bigger audience. So please give us a like and a review. It would really help.
Yeah. We've kind of been stuck at 12 listeners now for a while. And we're kind of like thinking we'd like to get up to at least 24.
but most of them have the last name Caldoni, so it's really sad.
please let's get the word out. Until next week, and I promise next week there will be no cannibalism. We're going to give cannibalism a rest for a couple of months at least. Until then,
all right,
toodaloo everybody.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
There was 7 Democrats, I can't even keep a straight face. But you ate 5 of them, goddamn you. Right, you want to try it?
Yeah, let me try that.
Now, his story of each man succumbing in turn to the elephant. That's what happens when you spend too much time at the zoo. Let's give a snap.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.